Tony, Black Widow, and Loki.
All of your friends from here to infinity. Sam's obsessed.
And Kaylee's the best.
MCU and me.
Hey, I'm Sayer, and I love Marvel.
And I'm Kaylee, and I love someone who loves Marvel.
And we're watching through the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, or MCU, in release order.
There's another order.
For Kaylee's first time.
And Sayer's 85th.
Welcome to MCU.
And me! Okay, we got it, we got it, we got it, we got it.
In today's episode, we're discussing 2011's Thor. And here's your spoiler warning.
We have some brothers who have some intense daddy issues, and some astrophysicists who have a really weird day.
Great. That's Thor in a nutshell.
Done. Okay, so I knew nothing about this movie at all. I don't even think I'd seen a trailer, so everything new. I didn't even know that this was the one that your friend Tom Hiddleston is in. Friend through a friend.
Friend through a friend.
Second degree friend.
I mean, 2 degrees is still pretty good.
But you have 1 degree of your other friend, Colm Feore, who plays blue guy.
Luffy.
Yeah, which I never would have recognized because he's all blue and icy.
Yeah, it wasn't until one time that I was watching this for the 10th time or something and I saw his name in the credits. I was like, what?
Who was he?
What? Who was he?
Was this pre or post knowing him and shaking his hand?
So I didn't notice it was him until
Post
him bringing champagne to the rehearsal.
Wow.
But yeah, I looked it up and I was like, what? You'd never recognize... And you really wouldn't ever recognize him underneath all the makeup.
Very recognizable in Pearl Harbor, though. I did not know it was him. And then when I was on tour, I was in a hotel room somewhere and Pearl Harbor was on. And I went, I guess I'll watch it. I loved that movie growing up. And he walks on screen. He's unmistakable.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, because he's not blue and icy.
But yeah, so first impressions, knowing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, everything was surprising. I think I knew that Natalie Portman was in this movie. Mm. Didn't know that she was, you know, on Earth and Thor was in another dimension. Mm-hmm. Are we meant to believe that it's another planet or dimension or realm? Because every time we go to his place, Asgard...
Mm-hmm.
Do they go through a wormhole? And maybe I don't even really care that much, because at one point I said, wait, so Tony Hopkins is fighting in Norway in 925 AD. That's what popped up at the bottom of the screen when, like, early in the
mm-hmm,
film.
Mm-hmm.
And then his kids are born. Like, what's the time? What are the rules? Is this a bit interstellar?
Yeah, they never explain it really fully, which I'm okay with, because... It means that we don't have to look too hard into it. They just say
sure.
Realm, and so does
dimension.
That mean dimension? Is it just way out in space?
Yeah.
And then yeah, what's the time frame? I think, I'm pretty sure later on they do, and this isn't spoiling anything, they do say Thor is 800 years old or something like that.
So okay.
Like they
just
live,
age slowly.
Yeah, they live much longer. So that's why Odin was in Norway in 900. And that's them sort of a wink and a nod, I think, saying, and that's what inspired the Norse legends, is these people actually did come to Earth.
Oh, I see. So I was confused because the first time they went to the scary dark planet with the blue guys.
Right.
Or, dimension, whatever it is. I thought that was Norway. When they showed up. It looked very similar in vibe.
Totally. Well, I mean...
And I thought they were going back, because remember they stole, like, the... What do they call it? The casket? The blue thing in the beginning?
Yeah.
But they took that from Norway.
No. That is confusing, actually. Yeah. I totally see I can't remember what it was like the first time I watched this, if I got that or not. So I only have the benefit of hindsight, knowing that, oh, now we're talking about Jotunheim. That's where the casket was stolen from. But okay. It all looks the same. It's all in this like blue scale in the beginning. So it's really hard to tell.
And, you know, they're all frost people and stuff like that, like in real Norway.
And it is... But it is a lot to take in off the top.
Well, okay. And, you know, just coming in without any preconceptions. I wonder what it's like for someone coming in to, like, watch Harry Potter or something for the first time. And you jump in, like, to movie 5 or something. And you're going, what are the rules of this universe? I have a hard time with movies or whatever, literature or anything, when I don't know the rules, like the physical rules of the universe or something like that. So I did have a hard time with this one. And there was so much CG. And I find it hard to watch, like, or hard to follow sometimes. I kept asking, like, is this a video game? Like, do they, you know, those big sweeping shots? And it reminded me a bit of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
The Two Towers.
Yeah.
You know, how when it gets so dark, it's hard to see. But still, really entertaining and easy to follow relationship-wise. Like, when I say the two guys with daddy issues, like, that relationship was easy to navigate. And I think that Tom Hiddleston does such a great job of playing the jealous younger brother who also is so in love with his older brother. Hmm. Looks up to him and, you know, finds out that he's a foundling or that he was rescued. Was he rescued from that other planet or taken? Is he a half breed?
Well, it is confusing because he looks normal and he's so small and the other Frosters are so big.
But then when the guy who gets stabbed with a spear or the ice stick says, don't let them touch you. And then one of them touches Loki and he just turns blue and he doesn't get the burn on his arm.
Yeah, like when he touches the casket, then it turns all blue. It's because he's Laufey's son.
Oh. With Rene Russo? Did Colm and Rene get it on?
Maybe. That part of the movie is so quick. Odin just says when he found the casket, he also found Laufey's son.
Ah, okay, yes.
Who was small for a giant. And as Odin is holding him, he turns from blue to pale. Yeah, that was always confusing to me, too. Like, what are the rules of...
Also, they speak English, but also the blue guys speak English, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of convenience, for sure.
Yeah, because then he comes to Earth and he, like, blends right in. At first, I was like, ooh, wouldn't it be cool if he can't understand them, or he arrives in New Mexico and he sounds like he's speaking a different language.
Oh, that would have been such a cool idea.
You know, but I mean, already it was very entertaining to watch, like, this, you know, 6'6" behemoth oaf of a man navigating, like, a diner. That was funny. I enjoyed that comedy, and they've sure milked it too, like when he's in the hospital and the way he speaks to people. It's really funny. I can't remember any lines, obviously, but...
With the coffee mug. Another!
Yeah. And Son of Coal and these things. Yeah. And, like, in a bit of a Kate and Leopold sort of way, like,
he charms
Natalie Portman because he's so different and he's so severe and he's so moral and upright and all these things that, you know, she's never seen before. And love Natalie Portman. I can't remember her character's name. Jane. Love that character. I hope that she comes back.
We'll neither confirm nor deny.
Good.
But yeah.
Well, because they left it on such a, you know, she's searching for you sort of note. The post-credit scene was great. Who doesn't love a Skarsgård in a film?
Oh, yeah. Any of the Skarsgårds.
Yeah. We're fans. When the movie first started, I liked that I was like, is that a Skarsgård? And you're like, I think it's Stellan. But yeah. We love a Skarsgård. Okay, and so I'm trying to interpret what the end is, because so Loki is some sort of, first of all, he wears the dumbest hats. I'm sorry. Like, anytime he's in one of those, like, ram's horn metal hats, I was not into it.
They're pretty ungainly, but that's directly taken from the comics and also the Norse mythology. He's wearing a big ram's horn curvy helmet thing.
For sure. It makes sense, I guess. It looks cumbersome for the amount of fighting he does. But, hey, loved the costumes. I liked both the costuming in the scenes on Earth, and then all the costumes of the Norse folks are wicked. I loved them. Gimli. What's his name? I liked his design. I liked...
I always forget his name.
I liked the woman from Asgard.
Lady Sif.
Well, yeah. Okay. And she seems to have a bit of a boner for Thor. So what could happen there?
And
I said to you, I was like, I want to play that part.
Absolutely.
When they remake it, I want to play that part.
Well,
it's a good part. And she had that badass moment when she like spiked the flame shooter guy.
I know. I wish they used her more.
Yeah. She doesn't have much of an arc.
But this is a weird thing to point out, but I appreciated that she was wearing pants.
Oh, yeah. Same thing with Natalie Portman. Like, yeah. This is my big complaint. You know, I rag on and on and on about the crazy costuming in Iron Man. I was a big fan of this. We saw boots. We saw leggings. We saw jeggings. We saw plaid shirts. We saw, you know, like armor. Even Rene Russo got a nice, like, sword slice.
Yeah.
She even got a badass moment.
Yeah, this movie takes quite a few leaps and bounds from where we were with Iron Man. And I think it's because they started to get a little bit more confident in what they were trying to create and took this opportunity to shake off the cool summer blockbuster and go, okay, we can actually write some interesting characters with this that really work as an ensemble. Like, this is much more of an ensemble piece than both Iron Man so far. It's all about Tony in those two films. And this one really had a team element to it. Everybody kind of had to do something, particularly Jane, Darcy, and Skarsgård.
Skarsgård. Yeah.
You know, they were just as much leads as Thor was. But watching this through your eyes as a first-time viewer, this is so much to take in. And there's so many Jotunheim, Odin, Allfather, Thor, Asgard, Bifrost.
Jane.
All of these names and facts.
Yeah, it's like watching a Chekhov.
Totally. Just thrown at you, no explanation, and not necessarily in a good way of just drop you into the world and let you figure it out. This is like, because it's happening so fast and there's so many colorful CG visuals, it's quite hard to follow it. So I think that's a drawback of this film, is that it is a ton to take in. But at the same time, I think it's kind of a calculated gamble because they played it so safe with Iron Man 1 and 2. And the feedback they got from that was, people like it. Great. Okay. But instead of just pushing a little more, they kind of just threw a ton at us to see what would stick and see if we could handle it before moving on. That's what it feels like to me, that they thought, okay, we have big plans ahead. Let's throw a ton of stuff they've never heard of at them and see if the film does well. If it does, great. We can move forward.
Right. But at the end of the film, as you pointed out, it was a big announcement that Thor would be part of the Avengers. And it said it in the credits right before the post-credits scene. And so they were committed. And with what you say, with Chris Hemsworth, who was relatively unknown at the time, great find.
Oh, I know. And perfect for it. I like how grounded they do manage to make this story when it's dealing with crazy magic and gods and
Huge stakes
that we are just dropped into. Like, what's Asgard? Whoa, this matters a lot.
For sure. And off the top, or kind of, you know, a couple scenes in, I guess, when Thor and his gang take the little light portal to Jotunheim, it felt uncalled for. At that point, we didn't know that Loki had let in the blue guys. So... And wait, what was Loki's motivation? Oh, he wanted to take down Thor a few pegs. Did he want him to die, or did he want just to throw him off?
Maybe it was right from the get-go. He wanted to ruin things on the day, tarnish Thor's reputation, and start to plant doubt in their father's mind about Thor.
Right, that ceremony at the beginning, was that like passing the crown on?
Okay. Yeah, so it was going to be a big deal. So Loki also was like, this fool can't be king.
Well, he is anything but Loki. Anyway, okay, you can tell from the second he's a little boy that he's a weasel. He's got a Draco Malfoy vibe about him from the beginning. Maybe it's like the thin nose or something.
That's true.
I love Tom Hiddleston. Wow, I'd never seen him up close.
I think he's the best part of this film.
Yeah, and hey, for the lack of male vulnerability we see in Iron Man, we got two crying scenes in this one. No ladies crying.
But yeah, I love the depth that Tom Hiddleston goes to. And that's, I mean, that's Kenneth Branagh, mm-hmm. the director, letting these characters be the Shakespearean level that they are.
Oh, it's fully Shakespearean. You're so right. The stakes are so high. It's kings and brothers and jealousy and feuds. Like, we have a Capulet-Montague thing going on with the blue guys and mm-hmm. the Norse guys.
Particularly compared to what we've been given in Iron Man so far. Like, mm-hmm. really off-the-cuff, sardonic, funny, pretty grounded in reality as much as building an actual Iron Man suit is, you know, crazy technology, pretty realistic. And this one, we're suddenly talking about magic and all these ridiculously named characters.
Well, it had a bit of a Superman vibe to it in that he's from a different planet.
Krypton.
Was there any explanation for why the hammer finally dislodged itself from the dirt right when he needed it?
Yeah, so it's a little like Excalibur.
Yeah, I felt that for sure when people were trying to pull it out in the beginning, that it was a bit Sword in the Stony. But then why does it finally choose to dislodge itself when Thor is in need of it?
He made the sacrifice of himself to save the small town in New Mexico.
Population 6,000, it said on the sign, or whatever.
But I think the hammer was always there to come to him. It wasn't going to be like anybody who's worthy can pick it up. It's Thor's hammer.
Yeah, interesting choice to have Tony toss it down the portal when he banishes Thor.
Well, but I think that I always took it that the banishment was part of his pushing Thor to become better.
Yeah, because he's cocky.
Yeah, he was like, son, I love you, but a little bit of tough love is what you need right now.
Oh, it's Little Mermaid. He gets legs, but has to trade his voice.
He gets humility, but has to trade his superpowers.
Do you like how we always try and make a connection to some other literature or pop culture?
It's great. Everything comes from something.
Yeah.
What did you think of his arc in this one?
Well, love. Like, he's cocky and sure of himself off the top. I mean, he's been groomed to be king or a god or both. I don't know what we're supposed to believe. But he obviously needs a dose of humility. But it's a bit Iron Man, too. Like, Iron Man starts out so cocky and needs a bit of, like, needs to be brought down a few pegs.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Thor. But I found Loki's journey more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say earlier, I don't understand Loki's power. He's a bit shapeshiftery, Agent Smithy. He's apparently not dead. So, yeah. And I'm also curious, like, as to what his motivation is. Because he says at one point he loves Thor so much, but, you know, he knows that he needs to be banished. And so is that just because he wants the throne? He also lets the blue guys come in to kill his dad.
But then double crosses them.
Yeah. And then he's so chicken to fight Thor himself that he sends, like, essentially a robot fire shooter guy down to Earth. Sidebar, I really liked how they tied in Tony Stark in that moment because it makes you think, oh, what's Tony up to?
Right.
Like, couldn't he just blast his way over here? And yeah. I mean, I know that we're going to get there. The Avengers, they all have their own powers and they all work together. So I know we're going to get there. But it makes you think just for a second about, like, it just conjures that in your mind. Oh, yeah. We're in the same world that Tony Stark exists in.
Yeah.
And same timeline. And not that it's that surprising because in the post-credit scene of Iron Man 2, there's the hammer reveal.
Yeah.
So it leads you to think that only days or hours after Iron Man 2 finished, we pick up with this story.
Right.
So that's great.
And that was so exciting the first time I saw it, because at this point, we hadn't had any kind of crossover except for that teaser at the end of Iron Man 2. That was like a cheeky little nod. It wasn't part of the greater film. So when he says, is this one of Stark's guys?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, they mentioned Tony Stark.
Yeah. So are we meant to believe then that Coulson and all those other, I don't know, whether are they agents? Are they going, whoa, what's in the water right now? We seem to have all these
supers
showing up. Heard about this from X-Men. And what are SHIELD's motivations? Because they seem to be a major obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they took all of Jane's research. And so are they just something from another planet? No one touch. Or are they thinking that there's something malevolent? Yeah, so I'm curious about what SHIELD represents, because that guy was, like, all over Iron Man. 1 and 2, and now he's in this one too.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that this one does what Iron Man 1 and 2, I think, fail to do in the redemption arc.
Oh.
Starting with the overly confident, arrogant, self-centered main character who has to be humbled and, in this one, literally have his powers stripped away.
I mean, he'll be fine if you have to live on Earth.
He'll be fine.
Like, with those abs?
But I really see his rise to redeeming himself. I see him becoming humble and contemplative and thinking about others above himself and not just walking into every situation super entitled and believing he will overcome any obstacle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because his flying, you know, through the portal to the blue guys off the top is very cocksure. He's just going there to fuck them up. And he's really cheeky about it and very sure that he's going to win. And so, yeah, he needs to be brought down a few pegs.
I really love the scene where he goes to the crater that S.H.I.E.L.D. has put up all the light up tunnels around and all the equipment. And he's breaking in and he gets in there. And then Coulson says, no, I want to see this. And then he goes to lift the hammer. I think it's such a wonderful scene watching him completely fail and break all of his expectations and experience tragedy for the first time. Tragedy for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for somebody else, it's, oh, you didn't lift a hammer. But that's his identity. And he's lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he says to Eric Selvig, Skarsgård, in the bar later, he says, for the first time in my life, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. I think that's right there. We see the beginning of his journey into, he doesn't know, but he has to forge something new for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, becomes his best self. And that's why I think the hammer ultimately flies to him, because it was always waiting for him to become the man he... Mm. To become the man the hammer knew he could be.
Mm. I've never seen a hammer that looks like that before.
Yeah, it's not a very practical hammer.
No. And also, it's very heavy, but flies you through the air. Like, does Thor have any powers without his hammer?
Yes, he does. I mean, okay. He's super strong and invulnerable to a certain degree. And, you know, he's the god of thunder, so something to do with lightning. But we don't really get to see a ton of that. It's mostly just...
Yeah, good point. He's the god of thunder. Why has he always got lightning?
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so the hammer is... the hammer is impossible for anyone to lift but Thor.
Mm.
Those are the rules about it. This is hard to figure out from this film, but he doesn't actually fly. He swings the hammer and then lets it pull him off the ground. And then once he's in the air, then he can direct it and fly with it. So it's not like he's just doing a jump. Like, it's he does get to fly with it, but it's the hammer's momentum that makes him fly. That's how they do it in this, at least.
Okay, Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm.
So underused.
So underused.
Yeah, I mean, the talent in this film is already off the charts. You know, like, obviously they can get whoever they want for these films so they can people it with the most extraordinary talent.
Yeah.
Even in smaller roles.
Anthony Hopkins is always so interesting to watch in this because some of his choices are so odd, the way he chooses to deliver lines. He also does nothing with his face and then everything.
Yeah, I really like the scene when he revealed to Loki that he'd found him as a baby.
Oh,
that was really powerful. It was like super relatable.
Yeah.
Even though that's not my life and I'm not a Norse god or a blue guy. Baby. I'm not a blue baby. But yeah, really relatable. Like, they played it like it was a scene in a play.
Yeah, they weren't afraid to go to intense high stakes.
Mm-hmm. Well done, gentlemen. He looks so much like your dad. It's unbelievable.
It's uncanny. There are some, especially the final shot in the end when he's in the foreground and then Thor is kind of behind him. I want him to go.
When you have a brother.
I know.
Who's not trying to kill you.
Not yet. There's still time. No, I've thought about that. If there's some convention that somehow I can convince my dad and my brother to go to... I just want my dad to go as Odin for Halloween or something.
Yes.
I just wear an eye patch. I want to send him an eye patch just to walk around with it. Because he'd get mistaken for Tony Hopkins all the time.
I'm sure. And they're both Welsh.
I know.
And actors.
I know.
Have they ever been in a movie together?
No.
Oh, well, of course, because they look the same.
Yeah. Or my dad
could... Your dad could do, like, the Silence of the Lambs, like an ongoing TV series of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, that's true. Catch up with Hannibal Lecter, living at home, making stew.
Wear an apron.
Human stew.
Human stew. Ew. That's what that pate is that he makes you.
No! What parts of this stood out to you? Was there a character?
The diner. Funny.
The diner.
Yeah. I wish that Kat Dennings had more to do. I mean, she's very natural. But yeah, very, very small part in this. I mean, I'm always grateful for more ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked her part. Like, it didn't rub me the wrong way or anything. But she seemed like just another person of their group.
Yeah, sidekick for sidekick's sake.
Yeah, a bit. I liked when all the buddies, the entourage, came from Asgard to Earth. Question, though.
Mm.
So are we supposed to think that in Asgard, they know a lot about Earth? Like, why was that the place that he was banished to? And why does he seem to kind of fit in quite seamlessly? Like, he's a bit disoriented at first, but he's not like, what's this, when he picks up a fork or anything.
I don't have an answer for you. I always inferred that it wasn't just in the 900s that they went to Earth. Earth might kind of be like...
vacation spot.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit of a vacation spot. I forget his name, but Cary Elwes lookalike. When they're all talking about going to Jotunheim the first time, he says, this isn't like a trip to Earth where you throw a bit of lightning and they worship you as a god.
Oh.
So I always took it that... well, it's a little bit... that's where all the Muggles are. My favorite comedic bit in the whole film is when he walks into the pet shop and says, I need a horse.
Yes, that was very funny. And the guy's like, we have dogs, cats, birds, and lizards.
I'll take one of those big enough to ride. How do you like this compared to the previous two films, Iron Man 1 and 2?
I find it's apples and oranges. For me, they're such different movies.
Mm.
Different directorial styles, different score styles, different costumes. Like, everything about it is so different. And what I'm excited about, I'm not trying to dodge your question, but what I'm excited about is seeing all the different just aesthetics that we're going to encounter in all these films, because they have so many different directors. And
mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily a cohesive, vibe from start to finish. I think so far my favorite was Iron Man 1.
Hmm.
Just because it wasn't self-referential in any way. Well, no, self-aware is what I mean to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm curious about is, at the time when you went to go see Thor, was it just exciting to you that they happened to mention Tony Stark, that Samuel L. Jackson was in the post-credits scene? Like, I'm just trying to imagine, as a fan going to see a movie like this and going, whoa, they're trying to tie them together. So we're going to see a film where there's Iron Man and Thor in the same film. Little did you know, by the end of this film, you see he's going to be in the Avengers, and you're like, whoa!
That's exactly it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll speak for myself. I had my own hopes of what they were going to do, but I was still taking this all with a grain of salt. Taking every film individually for what it was, and just peripherally hanging on to hope. So, like I said, when he mentions, is that one of Stark's?
Mm-hmm.
That was enough to send me shooting out of my
mm-hmm.
seat.
Mm-hmm.
The mere fact that somebody thought about Iron Man in this film was crazy for me.
Right.
Because it hinted at something greater, and so it made me nerd boner a bit. And I was pretty green at the beginning of this too. Like, I wasn't doing a ton of research. I wasn't well-versed in Iron Man or Thor. Thor, I had barely heard about.
How did this film do?
Not as well as Iron Man did, because Thor was an even more unknown. As much as Thor in mythology is known, and Odin, and it wasn't a flop by any means, but mm-hmm. it wasn't a huge success.
But you said you saw this a bunch. Did you see it more than Iron Man, or have you seen it more than Iron Man?
Now I've seen it more than Iron Man. This is one that I've come back to a lot of times.
Why is that?
I love his journey. I love where he starts and where he finishes, and the humility and finding his better self and becoming a better man and becoming a better leader, learning how to be a better king. I like the characters better. I like Jane. I like Loki. And it's the score of this one.
Hmm.
It's so epic and sweeping. And so it's like in Iron Man 2, John Debney went back to a much more classical sound, very marchy, didn't quite fit the vibe all that much. This one, very classical. Patrick Doyle, who also did Sense and Sensibility.
Which is probably how he knows Branna.
Oh, good point.
Like, Branna wasn't in Sense and Sensibility, but maybe through...
Yeah, no, I did read that.
Emma?
He's done almost all of Kenneth Branagh's films. And I think because... Oh, yeah. He did the... Patrick Doyle did the soundtrack to the Hamlet that Kenneth Branagh played Hamlet in.
Uh-huh.
And ever since then, he's been obsessed with Patrick Doyle. So he brought him on to do this.
Mm-hmm. What a different vibe for Kenneth Branagh, huh?
Oh, my gosh. I know. I mean,
he'd done Harry Potter by this point.
But directorially, though,
yeah,
it's definitely not something that you expect. I remember when I heard it was him, the only thing I'd seen him do was Hamlet and Othello.
And Harry Potter.
So I just knew him as an actor. I didn't know him as a director. And I knew him as a Shakespeare guy. And not knowing the grand scale of these characters going in, I was a bit like, why is Kenneth Branagh directing?
Yeah. Did you see Kenneth Branagh's film about Shakespeare that was a couple years ago? To compare that, which was so naturalistic, like set in Stratford-upon-Avon, you know, and they're all in like bonnets and there's mud everywhere, to like looking at something like this. It's so different.
There were some scenes where I really do feel like I would prefer to be watching it on stage. The scenes that take place in Asgard. Everything that Tom Hiddleston does and Anthony Hopkins, because they're such well-versed screen actors as well.
Yeah.
They know how to marry it. But particularly the larger scenes in Asgard.
Yeah.
I would love to see them on stage because I think they would work so well in a Shakespearean style. The characters, like, there's the Falstaff character in Lady Sif and The Warriors 3.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see a stage adaptation of all of the Asgard scenes. But just go back to the music, because I'm all about the music in these films. Patrick Doyle just kills it. This is one of my favorite soundtracks. I listen to this one all the time. It's so beautiful and epic. He so perfectly finds a little motif that he can use all throughout the film for different moods. And it's just a couple notes that... Da, 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 da. And it can be huge and triumphant, or just a little tinkling piano piece. I'm all about that. That gives me such goosebumps when I hear a composer lock in what the theme of the film is and then pepper it all throughout. It's just so... And the drums... And the strings and the brass, I love it. Love this one.
And really cool to see so many versatile stage and screen actors doing great work.
And people that we don't know as well, like Chris Hemsworth wasn't huge at this time. Tom Hiddleston, no idea.
He did a lot of theater.
For sure, but I mean Hollywood and North America had no idea who he was. I didn't, at least. And I was like, who is this guy? Realizing that he is kind of this monster that he's been taught to hate and fear. And someone who's betrayed by their father, too. Someone who he looks up to so much and wants to prove himself to. And so now there's this much deeper obstacle he feels to proving himself worthy. Because he now realizes he is what he's been told is a horrible monster. And so how could he possibly drag himself out of those depths to rise to the image of Thor in his father's eyes? I just love everything Tom does in this film. I think he brings such a beautiful subtlety and anguish. Very handsome.
Very handsome.
He's a very handsome man. Tommy, if you're listening.
Come on our podcast.
And be in my Shakespeare version of Thor.
So, lifelong dream, you can be any of the Marvel characters that have already appeared or are yet to appear.
In all of the films
so far? In all the films, in the whole franchise. Is there a character that still hasn't been brought to life on screen?
So not one that's already portrayed.
Can be.
Okay. Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah. Who would you play? Who do you connect the most with?
Yikes. I mean, it's no secret. I connect a lot with Peter Parker.
Yeah, but you like, because you like to think you're like a Peter Parker. You maybe were a Peter Parker when you were 15 or 16. I'm not a Peter Parker anymore.
You've never said something more cruel to me.
No. But like, look at you.
Look at him.
Well, we've got Tobey Maguire. Come on, you are not a Tobey Maguire type. I think that you think you're an underdog. You have status.
Yeah, that's true. No, I do definitely.
And you have abs.
So did Tobey Maguire in that film.
Oh, yeah. Like in one scene when he turned slightly to the mirror.
He was looking directly in the mirror. Okay. Flex his abs. It was my whole motivation in high school.
For working out.
Yes. I literally told a friend of mine, my goal is to look like Tobey Maguire does in the mirror scene.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, but wasn't he 12? Like, how old is he?
No, he was like 26.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you, but you're not now. You're not a Peter Parker type. Maybe at 18.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't feel like I am constantly living Peter Parker's life now. But also Peter Parker evolves too. Like he starts off as the high school loser kid and then goes to college and then becomes a professor. So he also evolves as well. He's not always the loser, but I connected with him in high school because of who he was, who I was, the underdog, as you said.
And kind of ingenue.
Absolutely. I'd like to see myself as the lead of my life.
No. I mean ingenue in terms of young and unknowing and going from a place of unknowing to knowing.
Mm-hmm.
You are not old by any means. And hey, I asked you the question who you wanted to play and you said it and I totally disregarded what you said. I'm so sorry. But pick someone else. I think you were going to say, it's no secret that I would want to play Spider-Man. But.
Yeah, I was going for a but. Because I would never want to take it away from Tom Holland. He is doing an excellent job.
And it was between the two of you.
It was. Little so known close. Fact. But you're hearing it here first, folks. It was me or Tom. And I turned it down.
You just thought you couldn't do it justice after all those years. You didn't have the Toby abs yet.
Couldn't get six. I had four. Yeah, I wouldn't want to take that away. I also don't think I'm right for the role now. Casting current me in one of these films, I wouldn't cast myself as Peter Parker. Unless they were going for the university professor Parker.
Oh.
In which case,
hot.
I'm available. I think maybe now I would cast myself a little more as a Captain America type who you haven't met.
Mm-hmm.
We're going.
Is that Pine?
No, that's Evans.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll meet him soon. I don't know. I've been really happy with everyone they've cast so far, so I wouldn't want to take it away from them.
Yeah, sure. I love watching Kate Winslet, but I want to play all the parts she's played.
That's a good point.
But also, I don't want her versions to go away.
So if I can find a new character. You know what I want?
What?
Is I want them to make another
Captain Canada!
There is a Captain Canada.
Oh, boy.
And, well, there's a whole team. So there's the Canadian.
And it's Paul Gross as a Mountie.
Paul Gross, yes.
Okay, but who's Captain Canada?
Captain Canada isn't actually part of the Marvel films. It's more like it's a different comic. But there is Captain Britain, and he's wearing a big ol' Union Jack-looking outfit. But there is Team Alpha Flight, which is the Canadian Avengers.
Have these been made into a film yet?
No. Alpha Flight is being worked on.
You're going to make the score for it.
I'm just putting it out there. Act in it.
Yeah, but you can also do the score.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can make all your entrances extra epic.
I'll just leave everyone else silent.
Yeah.
And only underscore me. Or underscore everyone else's lines so loud so nobody
can
hear
them.
No, what I want is for them to make another Wolverine film. Hugh Jackman playing an old and even older than Logan Wolverine. And I play his younger self in flashbacks.
I feel like you're cheating on Marvel right now. They're never going to sponsor us now that you've...
No.
Now that you've talked about DC.
It's okay. Disney owns Fox now.
Oh, sorry, Fox.
It's DC. Okay. It's all one big happy family now.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
So we're putting that out there.
Yeah, putting that out
You're going to be Baby Wolverine.
Yeah. Tom, if you know Hugh, let him know I'm available.
Thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe and leave us a review. Let us know what you think. And you can follow along for more at MCU and Me Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks so much.